Tzaddik, yeah.
The Calderachov. Going bowling.
Interesting thing, just to finish up with Tisha B'Av, a couple of things that are very interesting.
Do we need the mic?
I don't know.
A little lower?
Okay. That's what my wife keeps telling me. Yeah. Okay. A little lower.
She tells me about school life.
The reason, you know, we know that we made Abdullah last night and not after. And what is the reason, I don't remember hearing it during Shira unless I wasn't paying attention, that the reason that we actually make Abdullah after the fast and not on Matzah Shabbos in any way, shape, or form, is the purpose of Havdalah, as a rule, is lahavchin bein suda Shabbos l'sudas chol. So before we could eat on Matzah Shabbos, we have to make Havdalah. Lahavchin bein suda Shabbos l'sudas chol. The thing is that when Shabbos is over and Tisha B'Av begins, there's no suda. There's nothing to eat. So there's nothing lahavchin. When is the first time you're going to eat? After the fast is over. I was reading a sefer from Rav Soloveitchik. It's on Avelis, and he's juxtaposing all the halachas that have to do with Avelis and the similarities in Avelis and Tisha B'Av and the discrepancies with Avelis and Tisha B'Av. And this is one of the things. So it says you make Havdalah after the fast because there's no Suda to be Lahavkin Bain Suda Shabbos L'Shudas. It makes a lot of sense in that respect. So it brings to point the halacha that we discussed on some level last week in Shir, was that with somebody who's going to eat, somebody who's sick and he has to eat right away after Shabbos is over, he's going to eat at night. Does he taka have to make Havdalah? And according to this, he would have to make Havdalah according to the Shita, the way the Rav explains the reason for making Havdalah after the fast, because there's no Suda to be Mafkin. But for him, there's a Suda to be Mafkin. The one other thing that was interesting was that he mentioned in the Sefer is the Issa to learn. Now, he was noted to say that on some level, he got into the whole discussion of, so we don't learn. And of course, it disturbs a lot of things. And we talk about it. And he mentions, of course, this is Simcha to learning. But he comes around at the very end, he says, because of what we said last week, was that it also percolates in your mind. If you're learning, and it takes away from if you're thinking about what you're doing, your mind is taking off the importance of the day, the focal point of what you're supposed to be thinking about. But even so, he says, Rav Soloveitchik in the Sefer, yeah, Rav Yosheber. And he says very simply, if you're not supposed to learn, then why do we make Birchas HaTorah in the morning when we daven? So why do you make Birchas HaTorah? So you're making Birchas HaTorah because you're saying psukim during davening. You're saying psukim in the Torah. And if you're not allowed to learn, maybe you shouldn't say all these things. I mean, he's just posing the problems that we have to deal with. Why we say. We say Yos Yashir. You say, all the other things. Okay. No, but fine. But these are in general. But if, let's say, you don't learn. Let's say you didn't learn at all. So he says also, but he poses the question in a very interesting way to say the thought process is we talk about it in terms of simcha. So what's the simcha? You open up and you learn something and you have a lot of hana because you say, oh, really? He says the truth is, though, the children, they should be allowed to learn for the simple reason. They don't know what they're learning anyhow. That's what he says. I mean, what do they actually know what they're saying? They don't know what they're saying. But then he says the question is, little children, the joy that they get from reading the Chumash is that they can read. In other words, to them, it's a simcha that, look at that, I'm reading. And that's a very interesting thought process if that's all it takes. But then he gets into the point of saying the average person, so I could understand Chumash, so the average person, maybe we could say, understands, an adult understands the Pasuk Chumash. But Mishnayis, you should be able to learn. Because the truth is, how many of us really understand when we learn a Mishnayos? We don't understand what we're saying anyhow. So we should be able to learn it. There's no simcha. But the idea, and Talmud Torah is different in terms of Chumash, because the mitzvah, he makes an interesting diuk here, he says the mitzvah of Talmud Torah is dafka saying Chumash. Saying Chamisha Chumshei Torah is dafka. That's the mitzvah of Limud Torah, is Torah Moshe Rabbeinu, and not necessarily Mishnayos and Gemara. Doesn't come under the same category as learning. And perhaps, of course, he's not arguing the point. The other thing that I read in the excuse me? No, he's just saying, yeah, because there's no, the mitzvah of Talmud Torah as it is in the Chumash, Lagabe D'Oraisa, is not the same. Learning Chumash is on a different level than learning Mishnayos. But he just poses that. He knows what we do, but he's posing these questions and he talks about it. Of course, we know the way we paskin, the way we do. He's not trying to argue, but he wants us to put these thoughts in our mind, and they're just posing, you know, playing devil's advocate with certain problems that we have to deal with. The one thing that was very interesting in the Minhag Yisrael Torah, when we're talking about Shavua Shechalbo, and he makes a point of saying there were those people who said, of course, we know the halacha, but if you want to be that type of person who says that the only part of the 9 days, according to the Minhag D'Sfaradim, is Shavua Shechalbo. So perhaps, so they say there's no Shavua Shechalbo? No. Why should you say it like that? So Tisha B'Av was yesterday. So Shavua Shechalbo started yesterday and runs for the whole week. And the reality of that is, what do you do? What is their rationale? If Erev, on Pesach or Shavuos, you bring a carbon or you can't bring the carbon, you bring it the whole, your tashlumen is the whole week. It's Shavua Shechalbo. And you have a lot of things like that. That's the way it is. It doesn't mean Shavua Shechalbo is, this is the week of Tisha B'Av. Shavua Shechalbo should be, perhaps, of course we know that we don't hold like that. That's not for discussion. But he's making the point. He's making that point. Yeah, just that a lot of the things are. If you want to be noyig, if you're not going to do it, if you want to say, if you want to say, so the halachas of Shavua Shechalbo. So in other words, what he's saying is that he doesn't necessarily agree with the thought process of Shavua Shechalbo, because why doesn't it mean that way then? So it would have to be the minig of the thing. And also, one thing that Rav Soloveitchik mentions is we say Nachem, and we have, and why certain things are allowed in the afternoon. And we say, and one of the things that he focuses on, the tefillah of Nachem that we say in Shmoneh Esrei, we say it in Mincha. So why don't we say it in Shacharis? Did we say why we don't say it in Shacharis? Because Misha Meso Mutl Afanav, if you have somebody who's an owner, so you say Hamokim Yenachem Eschem, the mace is mutl afanav. When do you start to say Hamokim Yenachem Eschem? Misha Yisto Magolel, after the body is interred, and then you say Hamokim Yenachem Eschem. In the morning, when the Beis HaMikdash is still burning, it's Mishe Meso Mutl Afanav, it's the same thing. So until the afternoon, till after Chatzos, then you could sit on a chair, then you could do a lot of things, or whatever you want to do, but the things are relaxed in that respect, because Nechama begins. So he juxtaposes that with the Haftoris of Shiva de Nechemta, as opposed to Shiva, you know, Shlosha de Peronios and the Paranusa, and that's the way he juxtaposes it. First, you have to be finished with the Churban, and once the Beis HaMikdash is totally destroyed, then comes the Nechama. So you have to, I mean, that's a din, flat out. And you can't say Nachem until the afternoon, after the major portion was burned and the body is buried, so to speak, and there's nothing left of the Beis HaMikdash. And it's just these interesting points that he gets into and discusses in great detail. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, the Rabbina told us that the major Kohen started Tishrei afternoon, right?
Right. And well, okay, but I listen, the first Beis HaMikdash, we say, burned on the 10th. The second one was on the 9th. I mean, this is we're talking about playing devil's advocate over here and trying to, you know, the why we do things, why we have certain minhagim, why we do certain things the way they are. In other words, what was the rationale behind the way we pasken halachas? So it's symbolism here, basically. We're not talking about actual look at the clock. I mean, do we know when certain things, I mean, the fire doesn't go out. You know, you take your chametz out in the morning, and some people it's burning an hour longer than another person. You start at 11:30, it's burning. And some people have the bonfire going, and that's why you see in New Jersey, they have a policeman standing by every barrel, by every chametz. There's if you go into Jersey and watch the chametz being burned, you have every shul has a policeman in there to make sure there's no fire.
Yeah,
started by the oh yeah, all right. Well, they know because they've had experience. Yeah.
Rav Soloveitchik Sefer, he says the morning it wasn't clear to the Malachim. They were waiting. Should Hashem decide as he could do the korban bias, the korban klal Yisrael.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
Which way it was going to go?
Right.
Until Hashem said no.
I'm saying these are absolute. I mean, yeah, so all these things, you're going to find 1,000 midrashim, and in this week's parsha, you're going to have a million different shittas on a lot of different topics because of how much is jam-packed in the parsha. There's between all the Rishonim, everybody has a total different perspective on everything that we do. One thing that, like everything that we learn, triggers a thought. You said about the you know, a man gets up 5:30 in the morning and talks, and you know, and on the way he meets a woman, and that triggers the thought that you have in Gemara Gittin over there when it says somebody came along, he was on the way and asked to a Bruria, Eishes Rav Meir, and he says, Eiza Derech La'ako. And she scolded him for talking too much.
Right.
And then the Gemara gets into like two or three lines. What she sees is, so what should I have said? Eiza La'ako? Then it says, no, he could have looked at her and said, La'ako?
Right.
You know, because Kolamar B'sichla Misha is, you know, it's a problem. So you start to talk. So I was thinking yesterday I daven mincha at the Agudah yesterday, and right after mincha, they had the program with the movie. So in the shul where all the men were davening, it was going to be for the women was upstairs, and for the men was downstairs. So, all right, so it was Tisha B'Av. So I wasn't finished davening when the men were finished, and 50 women marched into shul while I was still taking off my tefillin. I was finishing up Aleinu, and I was saying the Yom, and I was taking off my tefillin, and I was saying, one of my friends who walked in, and he was bringing his wife and daughter over there, so he said, he looked at me, and he said, you know, we said hello to each other while I was putting away my tefillin. I said, I was beginning to think I'm davening in a conservative shul suddenly over here, you know? I'm sitting here with my tefillin on and there's 50 women around me and, you know, they just came in. What? Yeah, yeah, right. So, you know, it was just, it was, but I mean, all these things are, you see what happens, it's just strange. There was other things, but I wanted to get on to the parsha. The parsha this week, in reality, we mentioned Bechira, and the Abarbanel has literally, it took me a couple of hours yesterday to read on one pasuk. He had about 14 pages of small print just on the one pasuk in the parsha. But what I wanted to start off first and say is what I mentioned, not here, but what struck me was the way the parsha begins last week, and it says, Asher diber oso aleihem. So they asked the question in the Abarbanel, he said, we always have the usage of the pasuk is Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe Lamor. So what was oso aleihem? What does it mean? So Moshe was trying to now establish that he's talking to a new generation, and he wanted to tell these people who weren't at Maimon Har Sinai, they weren't there. Most of them were not around. Certainly they didn't see the reason it morphs into this week's parsha, because we have a repetition of the Aseres Adibros per se on the same level, but there's a little more explanation, and that we'll get into as well. Oso Aleihem, he wanted them to know that there's a lot of mitzvahs that we learned previously, and I taught you all 613 mitzvahs. The difference is now I'm going to explain them a little better. And what's the necessity of explaining it a little better? This is what the Abarbanel doesn't say, but what struck me over here is a very important thought process. Who were these people that Moshe Rabbeinu was talking to? And it says, "Ueschanana l'Hashem bo'esahi le'mor." We get into this week's parsha and we hear the same thing again. And of course, Rabbi Schwab makes a very interesting point, is that he says, unfortunately, what was Moshe trying to say with that pasuk was, "Bo'esahi" meant that he knew that somebody had to die in the Midbar. Go down with the captain has to go down with the ship. Somebody has to remain behind. And as long as Aaron was alive, if he would pray to HaKadosh Baruch Hu to go into the land of Israel, it would mean that he had to pray that Aaron would precede him in death, and Aaron would have to die, and he would be the one who goes down with the ship. So he didn't want to do that. But once Aaron had already was nifter, now he felt comfortable already to make his prayers. V'eschanana l'Hashem bo'esahi le'mar. But what he's trying to say also, by the way, we get into the whole idea that tefillah is 515, and but v'eschanana is also 515, by the way. Not that, that's just the sidelight. The funny part is, if you open up this Chumash, I showed you last year, it's just that a thought occurred to me that the parasha begins on page 515 in these Chumashim, which was very funny. It struck me as just very strange. Of course, it's only in this Chumash. I mean, in any other Chumash, it's not on page 515. It's just that when I worked in the meat business, I always laughed on Parshas Parah. When I turned to the Haftorah for Parshas Parah was on page 999. So it struck me. You can't help it if you're, you can't help thinking about it. But nevertheless, Moshe is trying to tell the people here, to Klal Yisrael, I want you to know that anything that I'm telling you is, as the Pasuk and the Chumash here, is, this is not because you weren't at Maimon Har Sinai. I want you to know that God told me to say these things. This is not, if you read the Psukim, it says, he says, very interesting, this is, you should know, because you weren't at Maimon Har Sinai. You didn't hear the whole specter of Matan Torah. I just want you to know, I'm not making anything up. This is, I'm repeating what God said to me. That's the language over here. And then when he says Vashem, the big problem is, it says Gam bi hisanaf Hashem biglalchem lemor. We are always told, and the Chumash says three different times, that Yan lo emantem bi lahagdisheni liyenei bnei Yisrael. And it says it three different times, a minimum of three times, that Moshe is not going into Eretz Yisrael because he hit the rock. Moshe says to Klal Yisrael over here, Gam bi hisanaf Hashem biglalchem lemor, gam atah lo savosho. The reason I'm not going into Eretz Yisrael, because of you, God got angry with me over the Maisa Meraglim. Well, which is it? Is Moshe lying over here? Is he making up a story over here? And basically what he says at the end is a very interesting thought process, but it's on one level understandable. That was the chink in the armor. And initially, God blamed, as the Abarbanel points out, God blames Moshe Rabbeinu for the whole specter of the Meraglim, because when God said, V'yosuru es Eretz Kanan, well, the word tetur comes from that. Very simple. Just, you want to see the land, go ahead. Then Moshe starts to add to the thing. Hechazoku harofe, hama'atu imrov, moharez, hashmeinohi, imrozo, hayesh bo eitzimayin. Moshe is putting thoughts into that. Oh, we have to check habemachanim imivzorim. Uh-oh. And God is saying, you're putting thoughts into that mind. You're telling them that you're giving them an itinerary of things, an agenda of what they're supposed to check. God just said to Moshe, Shlach lecha anashim, v'yosu eretz eretz kanan. That's all I said. Your job is, v'yedavar Hashem al Moshe leimar, when I tell you to tell Bnei Yisrael something, I'm telling you exactly what to say. You don't have license to make up your own stories over here. And now you did it. And that was the problem with the Meraglim. And Moshe realized the error of his ways. The difference was that God gave Moshe another chance to see, did he lose the class? Did he lose? You can't fire the team. You end up firing the coach. You fire the manager. And Moshe lost his, after he hit the rock, when he says, Mamrim heisem im Hashem, now he lost it. He realized now, instead of saying, will be better tomorrow, you know, you shouldn't have, you know, come upon me. And of course, as the Abarbanel points out, very interestingly enough, why did Moshe lose his temper at that point? What was the trigger, really? It really very simple, if you think about it. You're sitting Shiva, come into the house, and your boss walks in, which, you know, I got to tell you, we had a problem at work, you weren't there, and this is what happened, and this is what happened, and why'd you do this, and why'd you do that? At least say, Hamakom Yenachem Eskom first. So what is Moshe sitting there? He's sitting Shiva. He's observing Shiva for Miriam. There's no water. And now what does Klal Yisrael do? They come in and they say,
I found something on the web about Shiva is observing a Shiva's America.
Oh, that was my fault. Sorry. She heard that was Siri involved. They're Kolisha. So let me just shut it off. I'm observing Shiva here now, and the first thing you say is, I need water. I want water, I don't have water, and this is what you're doing to me. That's ridiculous. I can't take it. I mean, have a little compassion over here. First thing you do is be Menachem Ovel. And what are you doing? And you're complaining. But the fact is, Moshe Rabbeinu was held to a higher standard. So the Abarbanel says, so what is Moshe telling Bnei Yisrael when he says, Gam bi hisanaf Hashem biglalchem leimor, gam ato lo savosham? What is he trying to impart to Bnei Yisrael? He's trying to tell them very simple. He's reading them the Riot Act now for the whole Sefer Devarim. Every parsha is tochacha, one more than the other, and it gets more intense as it goes on. But of course, we see it in the beginning of Devarim and in Voschanan, becomes very intense. But he wants to tell them here in saying, look what's happening. I want to tell you what's going to happen in the future if you are over any Averis, if you do Avodah Zorah, and it's going to happen, but if you do it, you will be punished severely. You know how you should know that? I'm giving you a lesson. Even me, Gam bi hisanaf Hashem, Moshe Rabbeinu, I'm your leader. You would think that maybe God would give me a pass for little things. What did I really do? I did things. I meant l'shem shamayim. I didn't do anything that was so outrageous. I didn't do any averis. I wasn't oved avodah zara. And look what. What is the one thing I wanted in my whole life? To go to Eretz Yisrael. Struggling for 40 years with Klal Yisrael here, living through all of this, the 10 tests by Nasu Osi's Esipalim, and I'm the man in the middle over here trying to, talk to God. I was on the mountaintop 40 times, 3 times, 40 days and 40 nights. And what he says to them also, why does he say, our boy Myom the next time, he says, because if you think that when I went up the second time to speak on your behalf and get HaKadosh Baruch Hu to forgive you, so we know, just say, I was there 40 days. He says, no, I was there, Lechem lo achalti umayim lo shusisi al kol chataschem. I was there for the full 40 days. You know why? Because God, I tried. You beg, and you beg, and you beg, and you do it 1 day, 2 days, 5 days. It's not working. It took me the full 40 days of bakoshes and talking till I was blue in the face. It didn't work. Finally, on day number 40, Vayenochem al Hora'ah, God forgave me. It took 40 days. I couldn't get it. It just didn't happen. So that's why the Sefer Devarim begins, as I've mentioned, I know I mentioned before, it says, Achar Asa Yom Mechorev Derech Har Seir. He says, we took a trip now, 38 years. How long should it have taken? 11 days. It took 38 years. Why? Because of the missteps that you took all these years. It could have been shortened. Other things could have happened. So the Aliyah ends with the first Aliyah, V'atem hadvekim v'ashem alakechem chayim kulchem hayom. I just want you to know, right now, all of you who are alive today, you made the cut. Nobody else, you should be at ease now. All of you who are here today are going into the land of Israel. You're going. Don't worry about dying anymore. But why now suddenly does the parsha in last week's parsha start to say Sorei Alafim v'Sorei Meyos? Before in Parshas Yisro, Yisro gave Moshe the same idea, and they probably did. And he went ahead and he appointed the people, Kol Adavor HaGadol, you know, all you come to me, V'Ochol HaDavor HaKaton Yishpetu Haim, the Zekanim are going to do it. But who were these Zekanim? Who are all the people who were teaching Klal Yisrael these 40 years? The ones who died in the Midbar. Moshe knows that at this point in time, I need to appoint new leaders because I don't want you to have in your mind anything that you learn from the people who died in the Midbar because of the Chataim that they were part of. The generation that you learned up to now, Moshe Rabbeinu is rushing now to tell them all these halachas because Chaim Kulchem Hayom, the old guard, Vayhi Kasher Tamu, when everybody is finally dead, when everybody, the Dor HaMidbar is finally done and they're all gone, now I could talk to you because now you have no outside influences at this point in time to learn from anybody the wrong way to do things. When I teach bar mitzvah lessons years ago, I would tell the boy, don't learn ahead, because if you make a mistake, first you're going to have to unlearn the mistake and then learn it correctly. So I'm giving you a tape so that the first time you hear it is the correct way. Because if you when I come back and you say I learned on Aliyah head and then all of a sudden you pronounce this word wrong or you said this word wrong, now it's going to take you a week till you unlearn the mistake you made. Yes.
I want to go back. Go ahead. I never
heard the pshat.
Is this what you said in the Abarbanel?
Which one?
That is on a plea.
Yes, that's the Abarbanel. Yeah, that's not me.
Which I elaborated upon the thing. So what did Hashem want? Did he wanted like a self-managed team, which we call a model language, just to appoint the 12 people, but then make up the ground rules, what they're going to score, what they're going to look at? You know,
Moshe didn't want them to, Moshe wasn't in favor of them going in the first place. And how do we learn that? The other Rishonim also say, what does it say? What is the language? Ashdei Darshan, Yeah. Asher ani, no sein, but it's spelled choser. There's no vav after the nun. And it, so therefore, how could you read the word? Asher no san. That's the way the Rishonim darshan the word. It's already done. It's a done deal. If I tell you that they're going in, it's like Brias Olam, the machlokis, between whether Brias Olam was, you know, in September or in April. So for Moshe, you know, what? He should have said, so just go. You want to tour the land, tour the land. Yeah, that's it. Say nothing more. That's Abarbanel. That's not my embellishment. That's Abarbanel. And that was his mistake, Moshe. That's what it is. It's a very good...
So what should he be done?
I told you. He should have said Yosuru. And that now wouldn't have been his first mistake. Now he has... Everybody gets a second chance. But the second chance, he blew it too. The question then is, what is our... So, I mean, you brought up a point now, which I didn't cover. But the point is, if this was Moshe's second mistake, and it says, so Rabbi Schwab says, so what was Aaron's chet, that he didn't go into the land also? And it says the plural. It says, Yan lo emante bi lahagli sheni. It says, al asher lo kidashtem osi. It doesn't say kidashti osi. It says kidashtem, you and Aaron were guilty. So what was Aaron guilty of? Why should Aaron die for the rock? So Rabbi Schwab says, because after the first, God gave not only Moshe the commandment, it says, v'dibartem el asela, you should both talk to the rock. In other words, he told Moshe, but Aaron was standing with him when he said it to him, v'dibartem el asela, it doesn't say v'dibarto el asela, it says he spoke to both of them. So if he spoke to both of them, now when Moshe hit the rock the first time, he couldn't stop him. But the second time, Aaron could have said, what are you doing? Who told you to hit the rock? You shouldn't have hit the rock. Aaron didn't say. But then that's only Aaron's first mistake. So if Moshe is getting a second chance, why doesn't Aaron get a second chance? This was Aaron's second chance too, because his first chance was the Egel. Right. So that's the point. The first chance was Al Asher Asu Esegel. The end of the story. What's the last three words? Asher Asu Asher Asa Aharon. God's dumping it in his lap and saying, "You did it. You shouldn't have done it. You were afraid that they were going to kill you like they killed Hur. I understand, but listen. Sometimes you have to be Moser Nefesh. Maybe." But as Rabbi Schwab points out, what Aaron's rationale was at that point was, all right, they killed Hur, there's still a way to that God will forgive them. But Aaron was Moser Nefesh in a different way, because he knew that this would be a blemish on his soul. But if they killed him in addition to Hur, there would never be any forgiveness here. Now, at this point, Moshe would not be able to say, forgive Klal Yisrael, they made a mistake. If they would have killed Aaron, it would have been the end. And then would have to be that to start a new nation with Moshe, they would have to be wiped out. Because Aaron was, not to minimize Hur status, but Aaron is on a different level. To kill Aaron, who was a Rodev Shalom, and was everybody's prince, so to speak. You know, his approval rating was top of the line. To kill him, that shows, as we learned in Navi, with Zechariah, how could they possibly do that? How could they kill Zechariah? They owed him so much. So now we get to the interesting part of the parsha. Believe it or not. And what I wanted to say was, when I tell you all about the things that Moshe wanted to start from scratch, all the mitzvahs that we hear early on, if you notice, by tefillin, It says, Lizikaron Beinecha. Oh, by the way, just to finish up with Tisha B'Av, one thing, is there were those people who thought, who were of the opinion, and that was what they did many years ago, a lot of people had, that they put on the tefillin shel yad in the morning, and not the tefillin shel rosh. Because v'hayu li'os al yodcha means it's private. So you cover the shel yad, right? So devarim b'tzina, you could do it. So put on just the shel yad, and you know, you put your jacket over it. The shel rosh, ilazika. What? No, I doubt that very strongly because we don't hold like that. But the point is, there were people, it says, he mentions it, and says there are people who actually, this is in the Rav Sefer, there are people who had that opinion, and that's what they were knowing to do. They put on the shel yad, and that was it. He mentions where they did it. I'm sorry? Forget it. He doesn't mention Rabbeinu Tam's tefillin over there. But he just said this was their shita to put on the shel yad at least. But obviously we don't do that because that's going to create too many problems. But with that in mind, what is the point here in God is giving you a look into the future? All the mitzvos that we did in the Midbar, if it was going to be for all time, it says, you know, you have to learn to do it. But if you take a look by the mitzvah of tefillin and the mitzvah of Shabbos, the obvious thing that we look on Shabbos, in the Aseres HaDibros, we see it says, first time, Zochores Yom HaShabbos. And of course, we know the second time it says, Shomores Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsho. Why one place one word and why place the other? I know this is not what I said previously. I mean, this is a whole different topic here. But the point is over here. In the Midbar, what did they really have to do for Shabbos? Did they have to prepare for Shabbos? They didn't have to go to the cleaners to get their suits. They didn't have to cook. The mun came. The water was from a rock. The only thing that they couldn't do was go mechutz lamachne, take a walk outside the Erev, so to speak. Mechutz lamachne, be out the tchum Shabbos. That's what they were relegated, you know, restricted. But to do anything for Shabbos, and in the first time it says, Zohar es yom HaShabbos l'kacha. Zohar es yom HaShabbos. Shabbos in the Midbar was just to remember. Now they're about to go into Eretz Yisrael. So the language Moshe is telling Klal Yisrael, God is giving him license now to explain it on a new level. And he says, Shomor es yom HaShabbos. You're going into the land. You're going to have to actually keep Shabbos. You're not getting mon. You're going to have to bake your own bread. Watch out. Not after Shkia. You want to make sure you have what to drink? You have to make sure you have it before Shabbos. Whatever you want to do, you have to do it before Shabbos. Shomor es yom HaShabbos l'kadsho. You have to actually keep Shabbos as a workable place. What else that sticks out when it says, Lo sachmo beis reyecho? Okay, so they each had their own digs in the Midbar. Perhaps they lived in their own little sukkahs or tents or whatever they had. All of a sudden, at the end, in the second, there's another pasuk added. V'lo sisaveh. There's other things. It's not lo sachmod eshes reyecha, because in the Midbar, so everybody had a wife, whatever it is. You have a wandering guy, maybe this or that. But now, what am I adding over here that Moshe adds? Sodehu. Nobody had a field in the Midbar. So what was the point of saying Sodehu in the first Aseres HaDibros? God said, you know, v'chol asher l'reyecha, just a blanket statement of everything. But Moshe is saying, for instance, you're going into the land and you're looking at somebody else's property and say, oh, he's got a nice field. It's level. He doesn't have to pick up rocks or whatever it is. Sodehu, I want to add that to you. And so he's adding things now that are actually going to be done. With tefillin, it says, V'hayu li'os al yadcha ulezikaron b'einecha in bo. What is, it's a remembrance. Did they all have tefillin in the Midbar? No. Because what does it say over there? And the Gemara is asked the same question. You might have the Havamina to think that only in the land of... And Gemara Kedushin discusses it in a very short thing over there. You might have a Havamina to say that the mitzvah of tefillin only takes place in Eretz Yisrael. When you're in Chutz La'aretz, you don't have a mitzvah of tefillin because it says, when you get there, maybe you'll think that. Obviously, that's not. But nevertheless, it says, ulazikaron beinecha. It's a remembrance. You don't have to think about it now, but know that this is what I want you to do. Now, vahayula totafos beinecha uchsavtam amazuzos beisecha visharecha. You're going to have to write it. You're going to have to write the tefillin. You're going to have to write a mezuzah. I'm telling you now because you're going into the land of Israel. And that's it. You're going into the land. There's nothing more you could say or do. There's no zechira anymore. There's asiya. There's what you're doing now. You got to learn to do it.
There was no mezuzahs in the
Midbar. So that's why it doesn't say. Does it say in Vahayakib, by the tefillin, the first time it mentions, does it mention mezuzah? Doesn't mention mezuzah until now. Does it mention about divorce? Does it mention about Yibam? Because these are not things that are happening in the Midbar. Yes.
Why?
Go ahead.
Well, I don't recall hearing anything about the mezuzahs in the Midbar. Was that because they didn't have permanent homes?
Fine. Whatever the reason is. But now Moshe Rabbeinu is telling somebody in a month, in 5 weeks, they're going into the land of Israel. Now you got to actually know about it. Because now it's time to do... I'm telling you, there's no outside influences. You don't have people saying, Moa Voda Zos Lochem. There's nobody to say that anymore to them. There's just now it's time to do it. Before we were talking about it, we were learning it. It was hypothetical. You're sitting in yeshiva and learning. It's like you're sitting in yeshiva and you're learning all day about giving tzedakah. And then somebody walks around and says, can I have tzedakah? You say, don't bother me. I'm learning now. Get away from me. I'm busy learning. What did you learn? Giving tzedakah? So give tzedakah.
You didn't get into
it. Well, I mean, but because that's what I'm saying. The idea is you're learning now. You're learning to be asiya. The part that I was putting off, and it says over here, we got into the discussion over here, Bechira. And like I said, he has 12 pages here on the psukim that it says over here. It says, not on Kishyalna, but... I don't remember, but the pasuk is, Ufenti so einecho hashemayim, Baraisa, and you're going to look, Utsvo hashemayim, and it says, Vayotzi eschem mikura barzel. I just want to look at the pasuk over here in Kisolid Bonim. Ufenti, so where is the pasuk? Ufenti, so einecha hashemayim. Should have used the chumash. All right. Anyhow, so it says, no. It's in this week's parsha for sure because it's before Kisolid Bonim. Okay. So Raki Shomer Lechav Yomer Shemadato. What does that pasuk mean, actually? It seemed, on the surface, it seemed like a very simple pasuk. But he's talking about the mazalos over here. What I had mentioned about the, what we say in the five, I didn't say it to the shir, but in the perik hey, I mean the fifth kina that we said, is what was the point of saying it? Is that God is saying now, or we're saying now, if sasam tvilasi, if we have no ability to pray to God, the fifth kina is all about the mazalos, because now, what does the Gemara say in Shabbos? that the only thing that difference is Yesh Mazal Yisrael, Ein Mazal Yisrael, is very simple. We have the Koach HaTfilah. And if we have the Koach HaTfilah, then we could change them. We could change what the Mazalos have in store for us. The reality is, though, if Sosam Tfilosi, then tonight, just like on the night of Pesach, is God has our back, so to speak. It's Leil Shimurim. We don't have to say the whole Kriya Shema because God says, I'm in a good mood tonight. I remember all the thing. Lechtech Acharai Bamidbar. You were able to just pack up and get out and leave the way I commanded you. Now it's the same thing. If I don't have the ability to pray, you are left to the mazol. The mazolos are crying now because now, B'nai Yisrael, you are left to the mazolos. And we all know what happens when we're left to Derech HaTeva. Derech HaTeva means, very simple, we shouldn't be here today. Because the rest of the world, a nation of this small, lo merubachem, at the end of the parsha, we wouldn't, how did we survive all these years? It's impossible to even think that we should survive till now. So it says, Pentiso enechob, so if you will think, I want you to know, that I wasn't over Avodah Zorah, but penti soy necho hashumaimu. What you look at is Hashemesh v'yes ha'yoreach v'yes ha'kochavim, and you are thinking the rest of the world is oved avodah zorah. They think of the astrology. They live by astrology. You're a Virgo. You were born under this sign. This is what your life is going to be like, and this is what your life is going to be like, depending on where you were born. And as he finishes up to say in these 12 pages, it's not just the month you were born, or even the day that you were born. It's the hour of the day. And he brings down so many different midrashim and so many different gemaras and shas that one, the different mamorim and gemara nida and chulin and all these places that one, it says, Rav of Rav Chizda, they were both tzaddikim. How come they had such divergent lives? One had the Arichas Yomim, one had Ashiras, and Rav lived till he was 40, and he was poor, and he had no life at all. Well, you're going to tell me he wasn't a tzaddik? He was a tzaddik. So what does it mean, really? He gets into all sorts of problems. But he's saying over here, Pentisoi necha Hashemayim v'orisa es Hashemesh v'yesareyach v'yesakol chavim, Cold Savah Hashemayim. The rest of the world, you've learned till now, living in Mitzrayim, you saw everybody was living off the signs, the mazalos. And you will believe in all of that. You know what? I worked so hard. What was the purpose of taking you out of Mitzrayim? Asher cholak Hashem alokecha osam l'cholu amim. I did everything for you, tachas kol hashamayim v'yeschem, lokach Hashem. I took you out of the mazolos. You, I chose you to take you out of the power of the mazolos. V'yotzi eschem mikur barzel. You shouldn't think it was so easy. I had to take you out of, you will, everybody in the world is locked down by the mazolos. I had to take you out of those iron chains of the mazalos and say, I will control B'nai Yisrael. But he leaves with a major problem by just making that statement. And he says, after 3 pages of explaining all of this, he says, yeah, but now I got a big problem. You're going to say it?
I don't know. Are we speaking at a national level or an
individual? Worldwide level. Worldwide. He says, this is everybody. And then he says, every nation in the world has a sar that speaks up for him. And then everybody, does it mean every single person? Does it mean, so it means you're living in a country that has a certain mazel, you're going to experience what that country is going to experience. So now, your koach hatfila, the end result will be, the only thing that saves you will be your koach hatfila. And because you're living in a nation, you know, harchek mishachin ros, so to speak. You're going to go down with the ship if this is where you are. If you live in Sodom, you're going to have monster zuchuyos. You're going to have to, you know, derech hateva will have to be suspended. And of course, he gets into the whole idea of Hananya, Mishael, Azariah, Avram with the Kibshon Ha'esh. There were certain times when they were Hananya, Mishael, Azariah, so they also were destined to die in the fire. But the only thing that happens is sometimes God has an agenda, and if somebody meets the criteria that he is worthy of derech, to suspend derech hateva, like Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah, that's when he steps in, and that's where the point is. But if we say also on that point is, it's very dangerous to say that everybody is governed by the stars, because what does that mean? We're Schar V'Onish to the rest of the world. Yeah, and of course, that's four pages on there, and he brings different mamorim, and who says, Rav Chanina says, there's no, we're Yesh Mazel Yisrael, and Rabbi Yochanan says, no Ein Mazel Yisrael, and he has to explain what each one means, and they don't really differ in opinion, because he brings down the Gemara in Nida, says, the Malachim come to, you know, Tipa Zu Matehe, with this. So when does it mean? Does it mean when you were born, or when you were conceived, as the Gemara in Nida seems to say? So it's, he says, in the end result is, it must be at the moment of conception is the determining factor. So now, of course, but like he says, so what the Gemara says, what he finishes off to say, therefore what we must say is, you do have a certain proclivity. There's going to be, depending on where you were born, and when you were born, when you were conceived, all plays a major role in your life. The difference is, how do you channel what God has in store for you? How do you channel your energies? Are they a plus or are they a minus? And that's what the Gemara means was, if you were born under the sign of Madim, if you're a Mars and you're bloodthirsty by nature, obviously we know, you know, you become a Mael, you become a Sheikhet, you do something that can have a release mechanism, so you're for the need to see blood. He mentions about Jupiter and Saturn, you know, with Tzedek and all these things like that, and what your proclivities are and how you channel your energies. That is going to be up to you, and that's where the rest of the world is more restrictive in certain things. But then that is also poses the problem. How do we judge then the people who say the devil made me do it? What does that mean? Everybody's responsible for their actions. So the point is, do we have the ability to see Vishtachavisalam, but if you look to the heavens, we have been inculcated with the belief in God. We have a greater ability to know what our limitations are and how we have to channel. We've been taught. The rest of the world has a different mindset about it. So they are maybe going to fall prey to that problem of being bored on the stars, but they're responsible for their actions. We, on the other hand, have the ability to rise above and go beyond that. And this takes a lot of, and he brings down all the different Rabbanim and Chachamim and the Gemara who had divergent lives, and they were tzaddikim. So how do I explain that? And in other words, when you say Na Ra'isi V'gam Zokanti V'lo Ra'isi Tzaddik Nezav, how do I explain that pasuk? Because the reality is, it's not true, it would seem on the surface. So what is the answer to that? He answers to that, well, obviously what we have to be talking about is, you know, Schar Bahai al-Malekka, Schar Mitzvah Bahai al-Malekka. So we don't know what it means in terms of, okay, so you're suffering now. You know, we all were born with this guilty conscience. And I keep saying many times to other people, my life, I felt, you know, like I was working so hard for so long. In the last 5 years of my life, I've been enjoying it so much. I keep getting nervous that God is saying, you know what? Okay, I'm going to let you have it now. Because later, what you got waiting for you, you should know from. But, I mean, that's, you know, we have that in our mind. That's the way we're brought up. I mean, my mother just instilled that in me, you know, when I had certain problems in my life. And instead of my mother trying to comfort me, she said, yeah, so maybe you're right. So what are you going to do about it? That was always her answer to me. When something terrible happened, if it did, And she would say, so did you? My father, remember, said to me, yeah, I understand. Did you? When was the last time you checked your mezuzahs? When was the last time you checked your tefillin? When was the last? But so it depends how you were brought up. In other words, were you given the right upbringing, or were you given like, listen, you know, I could do what I want, eat, drink, and be merry for tomorrow. Who knows? Whatever it is, you know, I don't know, and I don't care. I'll do whatever I feel like. You know, I went to the psychologist, I went to the psychiatrist, and he told me to do what makes me feel good. You know, don't restrict yourself. You're limiting yourself too much. Just let it out. Do whatever you feel like doing. Okay. So do what makes you feel good. Right. But it's just interesting. And also, one other thing just to say, because I didn't say anything. I just said my eye caught over here because I try never to go without saying something that Rabbi Alpert said. So, O ani sola kim lavo lo kachas lo goy mi kerev goy. What is goy mi kerev goy? What does that mean? A nation within a nation. And he doesn't give very many gematrias, but Rabbi Alpert makes a point of saying, if you add up the gematria of goy mi kerev goy, guess what? It's 380. What's 380? Mitzrayim. Where did I take you from? Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim is the same gematria of goy, mikerev goy is the same gematria as Mitzrayim. So at least, what?
Is a minig among the old minig that you don't say shalai sani goy, you say shalai Yisrael.
All right.
You still keep it in Rome.
Art Scroll hasn't published a sitter like that. No one paid for that sitter, for that edition yet, wasn't paid for. All right. And, all right. Well, no, the word Goy Mikerev, he said, I took you out from one nation, from out of one nation to the other nation. In other words, I extracted you from Goy Mikerev Goy, a nation from a nation. What does that mean? It means Mitzrayim. It happens to be the same gematria as the Mitzrayim. It's just an interesting thought. I just, you know, but all right. So otherwise, I have to start fishing over here. Okay? What about 9?